Welcome back to another episode of The Strange Road. I'm your host, Mikey, and of course, always riding shotgun, my buddy, Bub. Bub, what's happening, man?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, just getting ready for this awesome interview. We've been super stoked for a while to get this one in the can for you guys. It's been a challenging week down here, but we are rocking and rolling and moving forward like we always do. We appreciate the hell out of each and every one of you guys so very much. Wanted to let you guys know about the Discord channel. The Discord server is linked in the description. It's all over our social media, so make sure you guys join the conversation. There's a lot of stuff popping in there right now, and we couldn't be more happy to invite all of you who aren't in there. Come on over. It's going to be a good time.
Check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would love to get this guy started and rocking and rolling.
Fire away.
I want to introduce our guest, author Karen Wilkinson, and we actually met Karen through a friend, a mutual friend that we had on the show, Justin Brown from Prometheus Lens. Karen, how are you? Welcome to The Strange Road.
I'm doing great. Hi, you guys. I'm just so happy and blessed to be here and to have a mutual friend like Justin. He is a brother to me. I absolutely adore him. So any friend of Justin's is already a friend of mine. So thank
Fantastic.
You.
Yeah, we had a great time with Justin. He went in deep on the Esau and Enkidu connection, stories from the Bible, which has always been an interest of mine, and kind of correlating other ancient texts with ancient texts from the Bible. And we're talking about Nephilim and the giants and UFO encounters that have been written about all throughout time and recorded in the Bible as well. So we had a blast with Justin. He's super, super knowledgeable. But Karen, I want to know a little bit about yourself and how you got into writing about these subjects. And I want you to, obviously, we want to talk about your new book as well, but give us a little bit of background about yourself.
Sure. Yeah, I never expected to write this book, honestly. I ended up doing an interview with L.A. Marzulli after I met him, and it became part of the fourth movie in his UFO series on the abduction phenomenon. And with that movie came I ended up talking to so many people reaching out to me, wanting to talk, wanting to share, wanting to...
Right.
And it led to writing this book. And, there weren't a lot of authors, female authors and Christian authors writing from this point of view. And so there were so many people who were wanting someone to reach out to. So it's really become something I didn't expect, honestly. But the way that it started was I went through some PTSD therapy after having a near-death experience. And wow. That actually helped me deal with this lifetime of memories. I always had these memories. It wasn't something that happened through hypnosis or something like that. And after the PTSD therapy, I was able to manage these memories better. And then I realized I need to share this. I need to do something with this. And because I figured out how to also stop these things from happening. So that is who I am. I'm just your normal, everyday mom, wife, grandma, girl next door, worked in the tech industry near you guys. Always loved writing. And I was writing for L.A. Marzulli's newsletter at the time when I wrote the book. And he encouraged me to write it. So here we are.
Fantastic. And yeah, a lot of our guests probably have heard of L.A. I know we've known about him for a while and have been kind of, looking at his work and a lot of the people that he's kind of brought into the mix, like yourself. Mm-hmm. And L.A. is just, it seems like we haven't met, but I would love to meet him someday. Just doing phenomenal work.
Oh, he is. He is. He just released, not to go off tangent, but he just released two movies on Roswell that are amazing. And not to give away too much, but they went out to the debris field and they found some stuff.
So highly recommend
looking at those. You can stream those movies at his website or you can buy the physical copies. I watched them both. They're he exonerates the Jesse Marcel Jr. family, and in the process goes out and discovers some really cool, amazing stuff. So I highly recommend that if you're interested in that. You know, he's done cattle mutilations. I'm in that movie also. He's just done so much amazing work and is just a support system for anyone out there who has had these kinds of experiences. And so he's a great guy. And yeah, I hope you guys get a chance to meet him someday.
Awesome. That's amazing.
Would love to. Yeah,
absolutely. Would love to. Now, Karen, I'd love to hop in. If the floor is yours, I would love to talk about your new book. And your new book is Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest. What inspired you to write this book? And if you could tell us just kind of an overview about it.
Sure. The book overviews a lifetime, my lifetime, of being taken by non-human entities, what people might call aliens or UFOs. And what inspired me to write the book kind of goes back to what I was saying before, that after being interviewed by L.A. Marzulli and having so many people reaching out, wanting to talk, I felt the need to share more of the story and also share how I was able to stop it. And I really dug in and did a lot more research on who and what these entities are based on my personal experience and a lot of the ancient texts and historical texts and things out there that support so much of what I've experienced. And so I put all of that in the book. And so the first part of the book is more explanations of who and what they are. The middle portion of the book is a lot of my story and what's happened to me. And then the latter portion of the book is about how to stop it, some of the things that are going on now, and some of the really heavy deception that's going on with these entities right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, it seems like back in the 90s that you heard a lot about alien abductions. I know when I was a kid, those were a lot of the stories that actually broke through to the mainstream media.
Right.
And it was cattle mutilations, alien
Travis
abductions.
Walton.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Travis Walton.
Big one. Right. The most famous, I guess.
Film came out and absolutely scared the bejesus out of me.
Oh,
and no. I was probably pretty young to be watching that, but you know, we had HBO for free for 15 years. The cable company never caught it. So
they're going to backbill you.
I got to, I don't think that cable company even exists anymore, but I was lucky enough as a film buff, even as a young kid, to watch a lot of these films from back in the day. And, you know, that's how we would get, though, whether it was maybe Unsolved Mysteries or, you know, reruns of Leonard Nimoy's, these type of shows, In Search Of. And so can you kind of just let us know, number one, are alien abductions still happening now? And also maybe share a little bit of your personal experience with this very controversial subject.
Absolutely. Yes, they are absolutely still going on now. And they've been going on for as long, I think, as we have history and before then. This isn't something new. It goes back as far as you could imagine. It goes back to the Garden of Eden. Not to get biblical or anything on anyone, but, you know, it really goes back in our ancient texts as far back as you want to go. We just change the names for what they are or how we talk about them and present them. So if you go back to what you were saying about Travis Walton, he definitely was, he blazed a trail for others to share. And he took a lot of abuse doing that. I tried to watch that movie. I was so triggered, you know, by a lot of what he experienced, especially the part where he's screaming. Heard and felt that fear and terror, and I've heard it in others too often. My heart goes out to him. That my abduction experiences happened from as early as I can remember. I don't have a time in my life when I don't remember them happening. And I have these memories from as young as I can remember. When I was really little, like probably 2 or 3 years old, I wouldn't go to my family members on my dad's side of the family because they were tall and blonde and they had big blue eyes and they were thin and they looked like these Nordic entities that I was encountering already at a very young age and who I was terrified of. And they weren't, my family members were not aliens. You know, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, sometimes people will take those cues and be like, oh, so you're saying your family were aliens. No, I'm not saying that.
I was holding back there. I was about to be like, wait a minute.
Right. No, but you know, as a little kid, those things, you know, you're scared of something like a spider, and then anything with long legs is going to creep you out. You know what I mean?
It's sure. It's a guilt by association.
Exactly. You don't have the skill sets to determine the differences yet, especially at that young of an age. And the Nordic entities, you know, their eyes were huge and they were not, they didn't look human, but they were so similar to humans. So, you know, but when my memories got more clear, I was about 5 or 6 years old, as they do with most people. And that's when the clear memories of them showing up in my room at night, taking me, really are there for me.
Wow.
And typically I would feel it. I would feel that they were coming before they got there. I would be so scared at night. I would try to find places to hide. Like I write in the book, I thought if I could find a suitcase big enough, get in it, zip it up under the bed, maybe that would work. You know, my young brain was just trying anything I could think of. I'd go sleep under my parents' bed and, or, you know, different places where I thought I could hide, and nothing worked. I'd feel that when they entered the room, if I was sharing a room with a sibling or under my parents' bed, whoever was in that room would just be shut off. Like you couldn't wake, I couldn't wake them up. Nothing woke them up. They were just in a sleep paralysis state. And sometimes they smelled, they had a sulfur, dead animal, excrement urine kind of smell. Some smelled worse than others.
Wow.
But it would be, it would come with sometimes a very low vibration kind of hum. And sometimes there would be a light coming through the window, or I could see a light out over the field, or all the crickets and cicadas outside when we were in the country would just stop. And it didn't matter where I was. It happened no matter where I was. If I was at my parents' house, my grandparents' house, overnight at a friend's house, they still showed up. It didn't matter where. And typically I would wait to see at least two or more, never less than two, of what people describe as a typical gray alien in my room. And the ones with the big bulbous heads and the giant black screen looking eyes. And they were thin and about 3 feet tall, maybe. They were small, they, you know, like little kids. They looked very frail. They smelled bad. They didn't seem to have any visible clothing on, but they had no like visible external organs or anything either. Their skin was like elephant skin almost. And they were cold to the touch, and their eyes didn't move. Their eyes were just stationary. And I've written quite a bit about these grays in my book and in L.A. Marzulli's newsletter, because I have a lot of theories on them based on my experience. But they would be the ones that would come to pick me up. And I would be put into a state of waking paralysis where I could see, but I couldn't speak or move at that point. And you know, being a little kid, I'd be so scared. Often I'd wet the bed or something like that, you know, try to get the covers over my head before anything would happen. And they would literally levitate me off of my bed or wherever I was, off of the floor. Yeah. And that's when that vibrational low hum and that whole body vibration feeling would just take over. And as I get, they would either take me through a closed window or up through the ceiling, or sometimes down a hall and through another window or somewhere. And, I get so close. I talk about this a lot, but I think it's important. I get so close to the ceiling, or that I could see every detail on the ceiling, whether it was chips in the paint or whether it was the wallpaper on my grandma's ceiling that had little brown curled edges on parts of it, or the bugs in a lamp, or just the details of the screen where the little squares were just bent or broken or weren't perfectly square, you know. And I would just feel like my body was going to a million bazillion pieces, and I'd be out the window or through the ceiling, through the roof, out of the house. And usually at that point is when I would get switched into a sleep state and then wake up somewhere else. So, and I don't know if it's because that's so much on the body, but I've heard that from a lot of other abductees too, that think that just takes it out of you. and then I'd wake up somewhere, sometimes on an exam table. Being examined by different grays, like these taller grays. They look like the little grays, but they're not the same. They have facial expressions, and their eyes, while black, they're not the same. They're smaller and they do move. Some look more male than female. Some were taller, some were shorter, some were bigger, smaller. You know, they were like people in that they were all different, you know, so I couldn't describe it and make it all the same, because they weren't all the same, but they were similar, you know. Yeah. So whereas the little grays, they're like cookie cutters. I really think that they are a biological construct created to be here to get us, because you think about it, if they have a crash or something happens, what are we going to capture? An empty skin suit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they're created to house, they could house another entity, they could house AI, or they could house a demonic entity or a demon. And for your listeners, are probably aware, but demons are in our extra canonical books of the Bible and in the Bible and in all kinds of ancient texts, are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim, which is becoming a more popular term these days. More and more people know what that is.
Absolutely.
If you don't, Nephilim is the progeny of a human and an angelic being. So that's what I think they're using them for. And that's what I think is in them. Just based on my experience, because they give off an air of evil. But their mouths don't open. They don't have, you know, they don't have the ability to hurt you, because they're designed so that they can't. Because I think if a demon can hurt you, it's going to. But they want that body, you know, they want to be in something. They'll be in an animal. They'll be in a person. They don't care. They want to be in something. So it's a draw for them to do that. And I'm assuming once they do that, they probably get to do other things, like maybe go into other bodies or something. Who knows?
No, but
I'm
sure there's a draw to it. So anyway, that's a typical scenario. What would happen from there was different every time, similar sometimes, but that would typically be what happened to me.
Wow. And what you had said about the smaller grays kind of being these sort of almost like biological machines, like in
drones.
A way. And that's what Bob and I we've talked about this ad nauseum on our podcast and our show Strange Happenings, and just theorizing, you know, just based off of all the eyewitness accounts of these things being just cold and kind of dead-eyed and very machine-like.
Yeah, automaton, you know, just running on a script or a program, you know, they're not really doing the heavy lifting of thinking. They're just carrying out, say, orders.
Exactly. Exactly. But think about it. They're lower on the totem pole. If they are the progeny of a human than a fallen angelic being, then their bosses are the ones ordering them around. So there's a hierarchy.
Sure. Absolutely. So
that hierarchy. And
yeah,
we can create skin in a lab. We can recreate robots that look human. I mean, it's not that far off. So these entities are so far advanced of us, you know, and I find in a lot of conversations that people try to fit them into our universe, our world, our little boxes that we live in. And it doesn't work that way.
No, it does not. What do you think the taller, more diverse grays were? Like, do you think those were the actual biological versions? Or can you explain that a little more?
I do. I think they're the actual biological entities that the smaller grays are fashioned after.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if we make a robot, what do we make it look like? If
gotcha.
You know, a dog, whatever, you know.
Gotcha.
So maybe they're low on the totem poles. Maybe that's their version of a dog robot. Who knows? You know.
That's wild.
But they don't share that information with me. So everything I do has to be based on what I experienced, what I've talked to others about, and, you know, then my thoughts on that. But my conclusion is that, they've just, you know, done something that we could do as well. The grays that, the other grays that are more diverse, I just think they're a species of, intelligent being. They have the same creator that we do, you know, and they confirmed that with me. They're fallen, you know, when, not to get biblical again, but when Satan fell, there are the angels with him. And what are those guys doing? Where are they? You know, that's where they are. This is what they're doing. They're not off living on some distant planet somewhere. They're right under our feet, or they're wherever they want to go based on, you know, we don't know anything about all the dimensions and the different areas and places and ways that they can live. You know, we know so little and we experience so little based on our human bodies and our human abilities. So, but that's what I believe they are. I believe all these entities are fallen entities. Angels kind of a misnomer, but there are fallen angelic entities, and there are different kinds of them. You know, they're more than the grays.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to kind of go back a little bit to when you were talking about when you were a child, mm-hmm. coming in contact with these more Nordic beings, blonde yeah. hair, blue eyes. This mm-hmm. has been a fascination of mine for a long time since I read about the Vril Society and the early contactees of the people that eventually the Nazis had taken a lot of their information from this earlier group called the Vril Society, and they were in contact with these Nordic beings. And mm-hmm. originally, these contacts were very positive. And you hear a lot of people that come in contact with these Nordic-looking beings, and they are a more enlightened or angelic almost. And so what were those? And do you have a theory about where they come from, or mm-hmm. who these Nordic beings are, and why they come down? And it seems like they're imparting knowledge on us in some way, mm-hmm. and showing us potentially the future of what could possibly happen to our civilization. You hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question, and I get that a lot. You know, there are fallen and non-fallen when you're talking about these entities. They're benevolent and malevolent, and I've experienced both. The Nordic entities that I experienced were not kind. They were not benevolent in any way. You know, I can't say for what anyone else has experienced, but I will say that when you're entertaining a fallen angelic being, it's not going to let you know that it's evil. It's not going to let you know that it's one of the good guys or bad guys. It's going to always, you know, tell you what you want to hear, and for its own means, not for your benefit, you know. So what you can't do is necessarily trust what you're hearing from one of these entities, because it's just the same as is with us. A bad guy's not going to walk up to you and say, "Hey, I'm a bad guy, and in 10 minutes I'm going to carjack you, or I'm going to steal your wallet."
Right.
5 minutes. So, you know, it'd be a lot easier if you just turn around and give it to me. It's not how it works. And yeah. It's the same in that arena as well. So you don't know what you're getting involved with these entities. And they could very well come and say, "We're here with love and light and peace, and we just want to share goodness and stuff with you. But I have yet to talk to an abductee who's had a pleasant experience. And I have yet to find anyone who can justify to me kidnapping a 4 or 5 year old little girl or little boy and justifying that, saying that that is kindness, that that's benevolent."
Right.
Or that mutilating animals and mutilating humans, it doesn't just happen to cattle. It happens to mm-hmm. all kinds of animals. Mm-hmm. And most human mutilations aren't reported, but they are out there if you look. You know, raping women and men, stealing sperm and ovum, taking fetuses from a woman's uterus. It's just, that's not kind behavior.
Yeah.
And I think if they wanted to share kindness, they would find a way to do that. That they're so smart, and they are smarter than we are, they are far advanced, then they would have many ways to communicate with us, not by kidnapping and doing all these other things. And if you look at the Vril Society and all that, look at what came out of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any good there.
Right.
You know, I mean, and I'm not
judging. That's what I was
saying.
That's what I was kind of getting at, Karen, is the way that it was presented, I think, originally with the Vril Society in particular, is that they were coming down to impart wisdom originally. And so that kind of opened up the door to this society to kind of let them in. And then they started to create ceremonies to basically connect with them more and more. And right. So I think eventually, you know, maybe they show their true self, and obviously, you know, the SS and some of the more secretive parts of the Nazi party that were, you know, eventually completely obsessed with all, you know, ancient esoteric knowledge. They were obsessed with, you know, going out all over the world and trying to find the Ark of the Covenant and.
Right.
And
I wonder why, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they're trying to find these superhumans in the Himalayas. They're trying to find Shambhala. They're going all over the world trying to, you know, connect with this, find this master race of beings, and even talking about, you know, hollow earth and inner earth beings, where some of these groups might be living. And, you know, they're down in the Himalayas digging down into the mountains trying to find these entities. It's just like, I can't believe that that's actually written about in history, and you can find that information. But you know, the Nazis weren't the only ones being contacted by these Nordic beings.
And where did they go after the war? They came here. A lot of them came here to the U.S.
Yes. And South America.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And the paperclip. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah, the things that come out of these things aren't good and positive. Absolutely. And that's what scares me about things like this, you know, people going and summoning them. The CE5 stuff, and you know, and I'm not disparaging Dr. Stephen Greer or anyone like that. I'm just saying, you know, you're dealing with entities who are far more powerful than we are, and you don't know what you're going to get. And if you're lucky, you'll get a kind, benevolent entity, but you don't know that, and they're not going to tell you which one they are. I can guarantee you that. And you might as well, you know, let your kid play with a lit torch or something, because it's not that different, you know, it's dangerous. And, and to summon these entities, I just think is just craziness. It's like walking into the lion's den. Curiosity, but
do you think that, sorry to interrupt you on that. I was wondering about it, because obviously if you're going out there and trying to call them in, maybe you call in a good one, a bad one, but I mean, really are, and I don't know the protocol for the CE5, you know, steps and how well they work, et cetera. I know that's out there and it's in use. I guess what I'm trying to say is I just think of these higher entities, or if they're out there on their spaceships or what have you, that they have more power. They are more omniscient. They can see us from that 1,000-foot view above all the time, that they're just always more aware. Does it really, I think of it like going fishing. Are we really pulling them in, or are they just stopping in and going, you know, shining laser beams up at us? We're going to stop down and see. I don't know. I guess I'm trying to flesh that out a little further. Like, is it more of akin to like when people say, hey, don't go out and, you know, welcome in demonic spirits, you know, or if you're going ghost hunting, or I'm trying to figure out that level of how do you.
Is it similar?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Okay. And that's a good question. Yeah. And that's why I was talking to you guys about my friend, Vicki Joy Anderson, who wrote They Only Come Out at Night, because.
Okay.
In the spiritual realm, and in the universe, God's universe, of all creation, it's a very legalistic society, and there are rules that must be followed.
Okay.
And there are certain invitations that must be granted in order for certain things to happen.
So,
when you talk about people and animals being abducted and experimented on, you know, I look back to the Eisenhower era and to those agreements that were supposedly, you know, possibly made back then, and things that were agreements were made. Or I look to family members who were Masons, of which I had many, who quite possibly gave those permissions also.
Oh boy.
So you're looking at, you know, different things. And then I, as an adult, have to break those agreements, break those, you know, agreements that were made, and then protect myself, knowing that, you know, they know, and I know that we have the same creator. And I can call on that creator and I can be protected, and they have to leave. They don't have a choice. And, you know, I've proven that time and time again, and others have as well. And that's just part of how it works. And that's, you know, another reason to write this book, because I want to share that information, because you shouldn't have to have something like this happen if you don't want to. But yes, if you're out there calling on them, then you're opening a portal to them. You're opening a doorway. You're creating an agreement, you know, things like threshold covenants. And you think about vampires and things like that.
Okay.
You know, a lot of these things might be old wives' tales and stories, but there is a lot of truth to them. The same as all the old Greek mythology and stuff. There's a lot of truth to that, you know?
Yeah. What led me to that a little bit too was, I don't even know where I heard it, but it was kind of this notion that, especially with all the UFO talk coming out with Congress and David Grush and all that kind of happening, there was this thread that I heard of saying, basically, we know they're out there, but the more that society knows about them and believes in them, that opens up the ability for them to actually come here. And I had never, ever in my life thought about it that way of like, you know, when people are like, it's for your own good that you don't know about it. Like, never have I thought maybe it would fit into that box of where, like, the more people that know about it, the closer it gets to fruition, and then they can cross over the plane easier to get here. And I could sounds feasible enough, but I don't know enough. It's just one of those things where I got to go, okay, I'll put that out in the theory of possible, you know?
Yeah. That's kind of a double-edged sword too, because you need the knowledge to be able to stop them from bothering you. But at the same time, if you don't have enough knowledge, then you're going to have just enough knowledge to be dangerous to yourself and others by calling on them. And that's true in almost anything, right? A little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. And it's true in the spiritual realm as well. So, yeah, I think that they try to make it with movies and books and things like that exciting and interesting and fun. And it's not, they try to wrap it up in this pretty package and make it all sparkly and everyone wants to be a part of it. And I want to see, say they want to see them and say they want to be taken. And I've heard Christian pastors say, I want to be taken. I want to kick their butts. I'm like, no, do not say that. When I was in the presence of these things and when others have been in the presence of these things, there's this thing called, we call it UFO brain fog. My friend L.A. Marzulli coins that phrase, where you don't think straight. It just clouds your thoughts, your judgment, and you're not doing the things you should be doing and thinking straight about the things you should be doing. So for me and for the other abductees that I've talked to and worked with, you have to make it automatic that you're immediately, when you know you're in the presence or something's around, that you're rebuking them and you're calling on Jesus and you're doing the things that you know to do to make them go away, because that brain fog is real and it'll just take over. And then you can't defend yourself. And I don't care how strong you think you are. If you're the biggest guy in the room, you can't defeat these guys that way. It's not about brute strength, and not necessarily even about faith. It's just about knowing and understanding. Faith is an important part, but I'm not saying everyone has to believe in a certain way or do a certain thing. You do have to know who your creator is and you have to know that you're protected. But yeah, it can be a very dangerous, slippery slope to go down.
I see.
Karen, I know there's a lot of people, over time, just things I've looked into, it always seems like people that are really heavily ghost hunting and into demonology or trying to contact aliens and UFOs and trying to have these experiences. One thing that we see over and over again is if you look long enough into this stuff, it seems like people become Christians. They become religious in some way, which is always fascinating to me. It's like, you have, somebody that's a ghost hunter for 15 years and then, eventually they become, someone that follows Christ or someone that it becomes religious and starts devoting their life to that. And are you saying that there's some kind of like this power that is somehow connected to, like you said, you call it God, the creator, the universal force, whatever that power is, if you call on that power and then this some kind of protection, or you're almost like letting them know, like, hey, you're not able to do this because I have the backing of my guides, my angels, whatever you want to call it.
What I'm saying is that there is a hierarchy, and there's a hierarchy in the spiritual realm and in the multidimensional, interdimensional realm, and including ourselves. And that hierarchy is that we all have the same creator and he's the one in charge, period, end of story. And they know it. And, I wouldn't go calling on a spirit guide or something like that, because again, you don't know what you're going to get. But if you know and understand that you have a creator, a benevolent creator who loves you and wants to protect you, then that's who you call. And that's where my heart is. I do think a lot of people will find their faith and a renewed understanding. And I don't like to call it religion because I think that portrays a whole nother set of things. And
sure,
what I'm finding is most of the people I'm meeting, we aren't steeped in any specific religious belief system, more that
right,
we know who God is, our creator. We know that who Jesus is and that he came and walked the earth in the flesh. We approach the world with love and kindness, not with judgment and hatred. Do you know what I mean? And so it's more of a feeling and the understanding and the way you live your life. It is important to understand that. And I think that's why people, after they've been involved in it for so long, you can only see so much of that side of things before you realize that, that evil is just so powerful and so much stronger than we are. that we're helpless without our creator to help us through it and to protect us from it. And I think that's why a lot of ghost hunters and ufologists and people like that do eventually find their faith, because they get saved from the evil. They get saved from these entities. Like, yeah. I lost my faith. I found my faith when I was about 18 years old, and I fell away from that for a long time and didn't find my way back to it till about 6 or 7 years ago. And, it was a part of this whole process where God finally showed me how to stop these things for real, for good. And, it was just something I wasn't mature enough to understand back when I was early 20s, late teens. Sure. And I think that's what a lot of people go through, is that we really find we see that we need that protection when you get that close to it and close to the reality of how evil it is.
Now, have you ever heard of the notion of there being this kind of hierarchy of ascended masters? Mm-hmm. Do you think these ascended masters are beings that have come here to help us? Do you think they're evil? Do you think they're these spirit guides that are kind of, are they showing themselves as mm-hmm. this kind of angelic positive force, but really these ascended masters are kind of like either ETs that are kind of mm-hmm. manipulating us? Are they demonic in some way? Mm-hmm. Because, there's so many of these beings that we hear about that come back to Earth to give us messages or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. I think you can, we give these things all sorts of names, and we're just calling the same thing by different names over and over again, because you really have us here, humans on this earth. You have what we know to be demons, which are disembodied spirits. And then you have the more higher intelligent beings, which you can call them angels. You can call them ascended masters. You can call them ETs. You can call them aliens. You can call them whatever you want, but it's all the same classification of entities, and they've got different classifications within there, right? But we are just talking about the same thing with different names over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so it goes back to what I said before, was there are going to be very good benevolent entities in there, and then there's going to be very bad and fallen entities in there.
Right.
And, we're not equipped to tell them apart. And that's where the danger comes in. And that's why, I don't ever recommend anyone mess with that, because you don't know what kind of doorway you're going to open up or what kind of portal you're going to open up. And you might think you're agreeing to something fun and exciting, and it feels that way. But at the same time, now what have you let into your home where your kids live, mm-hmm. to your family, to yourself, to the people you love, And so it's a dangerous game to play when you're playing with things that are just outside our realm.
Yeah. And, there's this connection with, we live here in Ohio, and I know you originally grew up in Ohio. And we have tons and tons of evidence and documentation, maybe not physical evidence, but there's lots of stories and reports of these giant skeletons being found here in Ohio. People like, Franz Zimmerman, and some of these guys that talk about them being these Nephilim, these fallen angels. Mm-hmm. Are the giants part of this ancient group that came from, let's say, the Levant, and they moved over here and started a whole civilization? But these are physical beings. We have documentation of the bones that are found. And so where I always get confused with, what's a Nephilim? What are the giants? Are the giants the Nephilim, and so forth? Are these beings from the Bible? Are they spiritual? Are they physical beings? Because it starts to get really, really confusing. Because, here in Ohio, I just think, maybe there's just a giant, a very large, super advanced race of beings that lived alongside the Native Americans and built these amazing geometric earthworks that were aligned to the stars. And there's not a lot of evidence of war here in Ohio. These ancient cultures, it seemed like they were working together in some way. So when I hear that the Nephilim are evil, the giants are evil, well, maybe some of them, but you have a lot of tribes like the Blackbeard giants and the redheaded giants were at war, and they chased after the Blackbearded giants, and you know, the all these tribes banded together to get rid of them. And so I feel like so many of these things are just all jumbled up and mixed up, whether it's aliens or giants or Nephilim. Is there anything that you can share with what we see in America here with the mound builder culture, the giants here, and who maybe they were in relation to, you know, potentially extraterrestrial or just an ancient civilization?
Absolutely. Yeah. I made a few little notes while you were talking, because that this is a huge subject, and we could talk about this for hours and we'll try to lay it out. And I was like, while you were talking, I was pulling a book out of that I had over here by Ryan Peterson called The Final Nephilim. Oh, he's a great, he knows so much about the Nephilim. He's amazing. So highly recommend that or get in touch with him too. But as far as what you're asking, I can break it down a little better. The Nephilim come from fallen angelic beings and humans mating. People think of angels as just living in this ethereal realm, flying around with wings. They're made of vapor and they're just, you know, flowy and what have you. And that's a misrepresentation. Angelic beings throughout our biblical texts and throughout ancient texts all over the world are able to change and come into physical, corporeal forms like humans. They eat and drink with humans, but they can also walk through walls. They can break people out of jails. They can do miraculous looking things that we can't understand. They appear in pillars of fire and in chariots of fire. That is because they are such an advanced species from us. So they are able to appear in a physical corporeal form. They are able to mate with humans and then produce offspring, which become physical beings that walk on among the earth. These are the beings known as the Giborim, the Nephilim, there's so many different names for the different tribes of these beings that have lived all over the world at different times and moved around all over the world at different times. And in the book of Genesis, Genesis 6 talks about when the sons of God saw the daughters of men were beautiful and made wise of all that they chose. And then they created the giants, the mighty men of old. You get into Greek literature and things like that, where you see all the giants and the mighty men of old, and all of these connect throughout different cultures and societies and religious beliefs. And that is where the flood comes in. And the flood is not just something that's in our Christian Bible. It's again, across all the cultures and across all the continents, and everyone's got their flood story. And that was supposed to wipe them out. But all of our ancient documentation tells us, but then they came back and there was a second incursion and they did it again. Now, personally, I think there were a lot of changes made during the flood, and that's why they've had a hard time recreating the same kinds of entities again that were there before. And everyone has theories on that. We just don't have enough information as to what happened around that time. Mm-hmm. Did some of them survive? You know, there definitely had to have been a second incursion. You know, did they take some off planet, bring it back? Who knows? There's so many possibilities. Yep. But they ended up in different places all over the world. You know, you take the Paracas skulls, for example, these elongated skulls with no sagittal suture here. So it's definitely not a human skull. It was not cranial headboarding. They're huge. Their eye sockets are massive. And they've got Eastern European DNA. So how does that get down to South America? Mm-hmm. You know, they've proven that they came from there. And so you're talking about these Nephilim, these giants, these mighty men of old were able to come across and then inhabit pretty much the entire earth. And most of the stories of them, especially you find in Native American tribes here in the United States, and their ancient histories tell of how they attacked the Native Americans and they cannibalized. Well, cannibalize. They say they cannibalize them, but that's actually not a proper term because you have to be eating your own people.
Right.
Also, mm-hmm. but that they killed and ate them, that they were, you know, dangerous. That's why they do the how and hold up the hand with five fingers, because most of the Nephilim had six.
Right.
And things like that. And so many things.
I did not know that.
In double rows of teeth.
Did not know that. Really? The.
Yeah. So that's why they would do the greeting holding up their hands, because most of the Nephilim had six fingers. And that's why that greeting was done from far, because they're not all tall. They're not all giant. Some of them are human. You know, they came in different sizes and shapes, just like we do. Yeah. Some had red hair, some had blonde hair, some had black hair. Well, they were picking up human genetic traits. So when people are like, I have red hair, does that mean my family's Nephilim? No, 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 no. It means they also had some of the same traits that we as humans have. And that's all. That's all there is to that. So nobody has to worry about that. You are human, period. You are not Nephilim. You know, if you have six fingers, that's just a genetic thing that can happen. It doesn't mean you're Nephilim. But one of the things they knew about these entities is that they did have six fingers. And so that was an easy way to tell. And you'll notice in some of these mound building cultures that you have here, in a lot of the mounds that were excavated in the Ohio Valley and in that area in West Virginia and such in Illinois, that when they found these giant bones, they were decapitated, because they said the only way to kill these Nephilim was to decapitate them. So there was violence in this area in that respect, and that continued when they weren't sure about somebody. They would behead them and bury them in very specific ways.
Wow.
I remember my parents always told me that there were giant bones in those mounds, and that the Smithsonian took them and the British Museum. And my dad was part of a program trying to get those bones back over the years, but that obviously never came to fruition. But yeah, he did try, as did a lot of other people in the historical societies in Ohio. But for the expert on that, yeah, you definitely want someone like Fritz Zimmerman, something like that. So as far as the Nephilim go, yeah, you're right on track. Everything you were saying was right, Mikey, as far as it's confusing, but it's all right at the same time, because there's just different names for all these things.
Right.
And you've really got three classifications. You've got these higher order kind of angelic beings. You've got humans like us. And then you have the cross between the two, which is a Nephilim. And when those die, their disembodied spirit, because it's not human and it's not angelic, is cursed to wander the earth. And that's where you get demons. So I guess there's four classifications.
They just don't have, those spirits just don't have a place to go.
They don't have a place to go.
They're kind of meandering around the ether, trying to find somebody to inhabit a body, to, you know, continue on their work. And, you know, it's always said that, you know, demons are trying to get your soul. They're either trying to get you to commit suicide. They're trying to get you to murder somebody, which, you know, we did a great episode with Lindsay Brisbane. She has a podcast called The Chilling, where she totally documents her experience with her two roommates in Akron, Ohio, in a demonic house. And basically the demon was splitting all of her roommates apart together, whispering in one of the ears of the girl that never came out of her room.
Like sowing division,
And she thought that all of her roommates were against her. And years later, when they reconnected, she's like, no, I thought you guys were out in the other room talking about me. She's like, we were barely ever home. All of this was happening, you thought we were making fun of, she thought they were making fun of her. She thought that, you know, and then also she started getting thoughts of suicide, and, you know, her boyfriend turned kind of evil on her. And there's kind of this whole domestic experience that happened. And so you could tell that this being or whatever it was really manipulating them. And that's something that you hear over and over again, is these beings, their main goal is to make you completely miserable to the point where, you know, you're either going to take your own life or try to take someone else's.
Yeah. And they're trying to win.
Yeah,
exactly. They are. And think about it. They've been around a long time. They can watch your whole life and your grandma's life and your mom's life. So for them to come back and say, I am your grandma, I'll come back to see you, and I remember your favorite cookie is this and your favorite color is that. Of course they're going to know those things. They've been able to gather all that information for years.
Yeah.
So you can't trust those things, you know, because then you could end up like your friend. I mean, that's a tragic story. I hate to hear stories like that because it just breaks my heart. But yeah, these things are not, it's nothing to play with. Definitely not.
And so, Karen, where do you think all of these abductions and whatever is happening, you know, with the craft that we're seeing, what is the end game of all of this? What do they want, according to your experiences and the things that you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. If the end game is the same as it's been since the get-go, is to deceive people and keep them from the truth. It's a seed war. It started in the Garden of Eden in Genesis 3:15 when he says, you know, and your seed will be at enmity with the seed of the woman, and he will bruise your head, he will bruise your heel, and you will crush his head. And that's talking about how, you know, Satan would bruise Jesus' heel and he would crush Satan's head. And at that point, he's trying to stop Jesus from even being born. And that starts a seed war. And he wasn't able to do that. But what he can do is continue to corrupt the human bloodline, to try to create these modern day Nephilim, which are, you know, hybrid humans, a cross between these alien, what we call aliens, which are the same fallen angelic beings we've been dealing with all along, and humans. And by getting people to think that there are benevolent space brothers, they can lead people away from the truth. If people start to trust them and want to follow them and want to, you know, create religions behind them, which I'm seeing happening, then they're going to be able to lead people away from the truth. And that is the end game. In a nutshell, is to, they're jealous. They're upset. They don't want, you know, humans were put on this earth. God created man out of mud, you know, out of the dirt. Took this planet away from these beings. If you read if you go back to Genesis 1, there's so much there about, and so much in the Bible about what happened before we were here. I think they're jealous. They're upset about that. We now have the birthright, as Timothy Alberino writes about in his book called Birthright. And they want it back, and they're trying to get it back from us. And that is the end game.
Wow. Yeah, it's just,
that, you know, no, I've never heard that take.
No, that really clears it up. Because, you know, when I read the, you know, the cover of your book is evil stolen seed. Now, are they actually physically stealing seeds, you know, because you hear about the abductions as they're taking, you know, biological material from men, they're taking biological material from women, you know, it seems to be this kind of, and then you go all the way back to, you know, the story of Adamu, which is very close to the story of Adam and Eve in the Sumerian texts, where it literally says that these were genetically created beings, the first man, Adamu, and the Nephilim, or the Anunnaki, you know, the Anunnaki is from the get-go created human beings to essentially mine gold. And so you have these beings from the far distant past, and it always seems like from the beginning, there's this genetically modifying humans to either do what they want us to do, but there's always this genetic component to whether we're talking about UFOs, aliens, you know, super advanced beings from the past. And it's just, they have that. I mean, we're doing that. We're genetically modifying everything right now.
Oh,
and so, you know, in the 1990s, it seemed, you know, 80s and 90s, it seemed like, well, why would they be doing that? But now, as we go on in time, it's like, that's what we're obsessed with. We're obsessed with AI, and we're obsessed with genetics.
Yes.
And it seems like that's a big part of it is, are they making like these genetic banks of humans for what purpose? Right. Is my question.
The late Dr. Chuck Missler used to say, Satan's outnumbered 2-1. He's building an army. And I don't think he's wrong. I don't think he's wrong. It's been what's been going on since for as long as men have been created, since God created us. There has been just this, you know, Satan wanted to be God and he wasn't. And when he got cast out, he wanted to create a counterfeit kingdom, you know, to prove that he could do it too. but he couldn't. And he's still trying to create this counterfeit kingdom. You know, he's still working on that. So my, my thoughts on that are that, you have to, sorry about that. My screen just went black and I, So, but yeah, it's been about the genetics. The stolen seed portion of it is that for me, excuse me, just got something in my throat. You know, I was impregnated and those, fetuses were taken from me in the third month. And I know that sounds crazy, but it happened to me. I talked to probably 3 or 4 women a week who've been through the same thing. Exact same thing.
Wow.
It is so prevalent. You have no idea.
And then are they just growing these babies and taking them and growing them in like a test tube kind of situation?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you about one time when they took me, I was in my early 20s and I was taken, I was abducted and I wake up and they took me into these underground facilities. I know we were underground because we were getting these elevators that just went down and down and down. Whoa. And then we got in when I was little, I called them the sideways elevators because they were silent and they went either, you know, that way or sometimes up at an angle or down at an angle, but they had benches.
Weird. Bench seats.
I realize now it was probably a train, like a high speed train. But when I was little, I didn't know that because cars and trains made a lot of noise. This didn't make noise.
Yeah.
So I'm in a hallway. These underground facilities are massive. You have to understand, they're huge. They're bigger than anything you can imagine. They're, you know, take football stadiums and airports and all that, and just put it together and you're not even close. I mean, if you think about how deep our oceans are, you know, you can fit the Chrysler Building end to end over and over again and still not get to the deepest part they've discovered recently in the Atlantic Ocean, let alone like the Mariana Trench in the Pacific.
Right.
We don't know what's under our feet. No one's, you know, what we're told in school is what someone thinks, but not what someone's actually gone to see.
Yeah.
So there's a lot happening under our feet. There are deep underground military bases. There are underground places where these things are working. There are humans and non-human alien entities working side by side. I know because I've seen them. I've been there. On this one occasion, they took me, I'm in this hallway. It's very darkly lit too. Everywhere down there, most places, not everywhere, is almost a red, blue backlighting to it. It must have something to do with their vision or something. Hmm. And most of them have huge eyes. So I think they pick up light much more than we do.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it always just seems so dark. This hallway I'm going down has rows on either side of like the square aquarium, like things that you would see in a pet store.
Sure.
And there, each one has some sort of a fetus, some sort of a thing in it, like a fetus. And I don't know what the fetuses were of. They could have been human, Nephilim, animal, whatever. And they are lined up and down, you know, and it's so tall. I couldn't see the top one and Damn. Different sizes and shapes. And it looks like red backlit. So it's hard for me to see exactly what's in there. And we get to the end of this particular hallway and then the hallway goes on, but it's no longer those tank type things. It gets narrower. But at the end, that part, there's a door on either side. And then they open the one door and it's about the size of a large closet. And they escort me into that room. I think there was like a Nordic with me and a taller gray who looked almost female. And there's a woman in there imitating childbirth, which I was just like, ugh. Anyway, that's another story for another day, but
Whoa.
They hand me this baby and they say, this is your baby. This is a good baby. Hold your baby. So I take this baby and I hold this baby and it's very dark, almost a purple red color. Its head is very large for a baby. Its eyes are very large and dark, like black, but I hold it up to me and it won't cuddle into me. It doesn't respond to me. It's just, it doesn't respond at all. And I'm just like, why won't, you know, what's wrong with it? Why won't it respond to me? You know, I'm physically upset, but I'm like, but if this is my baby, then I want this baby and I'm going to take this baby with me. I'm taking this baby home and I'm going to take care of it. You know, it was clearly not human, but they said it was mine. So I wanted it. I got very upset because it just wouldn't respond. I'm like, what's wrong with the baby? You know? And at that point I was so upset. They switched me off. You know, they could just put you into a sleep state. Just like that. I mean, you have no control. You have no idea how helpless you feel when you're being taken by these entities. There is zero control.
That's wild.
And then I woke up back in my room, so upset because I wanted that baby. If it's mine, I wanted it. I wanted to take care of it. I had pregnancies verified by doctors. I'd go in, I'd have my doctor's appointments. I'd hear the heartbeat. I would be on my vitamins. I had the blood tests, you know, because it wasn't like it is today where you just went and grabbed a test off the shelf and called your doctor and said you were pregnant. And back then, you had to go to the doctor's office and you had to get a prescription for prenatal vitamins too. It was all a whole thing. And then the first time it happened, I was in end of the third month, into the fourth month, and I started to feel really bad in the middle of the night. I was spotting a little bit, but nothing came out of me. My husband took me to the hospital, and they couldn't find a heartbeat. And they did an ultrasound, and there was no baby in there. And they did a DNC, and there was no fetal tissue. And, you know, they're like, you must have lost your baby at home.
What?
And this happened over and over again.
Oh, my friends, God, dude. That's
I have friends who
freaking me out.
And everything is there except the baby. So, like, the sac, the amniotic sac is still there. And the placenta, you know, all that is still there. But the baby's not there.
And you'd think, yeah, you would think there'd be traces more than just, yeah, like.
Nothing.
What?
They do DNCs to make
sure. That's crazy.
You can have an infection. There can be, you know, you can have all kinds of placenta previa problems, all kinds of things like that, and more future problems. So it's common to go in and do that. Nothing, no fetal tissue. And this is not an uncommon occurrence. You guys would not believe how many women I have talked to. And then in the book, I have a section where I show the report that the government released saying they know about these missing pregnancies. Mm. They know that this is a problem with these abductions. They've admitted to it. And along with a whole litany of other things in the book that I list out. And I list out, there's a list in here. I probably have it right here because someone was asking me about it the other day when I was talking. Yeah, there's a list here. I've got like two pages. Well, it's going to be hard for you to see.
Yeah, let me go. Let me take you full screen real quick.
There's two pages of bullet points in here. This one page shows the triangle mark that they left on my back.
Whoa.
That.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then this is just half of the symptoms and problems that the government has said are reported problems. And the book lists the name of the report. It is called The Acute Anomalous and Subacute Side Effects of on Human Biological Tissue. That's the name of the report. It was released in, I think, 2020, 2021. They did this during COVID, so no one would pay attention. And I know that like 10 of those things have happened to me. I mean, that's why we were talking about my frequent hospital visits, because I've had so many anomalous things that they're like, well, your bones are growing out of control, but these bones are disintegrating. How is that happening? You know, it doesn't make sense because I have both things that are opposite each other. How does that work?
You ever had any Men in Black encounters?
No, you know, I've been.
Sorry, I know that's out of left field, but just thought I'd throw it out there.
I've been followed.
I was going to say.
Many times. Yeah. I've been had really weird encounters where I'll step off a curb and a car will come out of nowhere. And I just happened, you know, by the grace of God, something always pulls me back. I don't know how I'm not dead yet. When I had a near-death experience in the hospital, it was because I was in an operating room, but we weren't ready to start surgery yet. And I had two IV ports in and nothing else. So I wasn't hooked up to any machines. Bob, you'll probably understand this pretty well because I get some pushback on this. I'm like, look, this is what happened. And I wasn't hooked up to the machines yet because my surgeon wasn't ready, but it was like the third or fourth surgery I'd done with him. But something weird was going on with him at that point. Anyway, back to it. A nurse anesthetist or an anesthesiologist, I don't know which she was, came in. She had her big white coat on. Leaned over me. Her pocket was full of syringes. She pulled one out, pushed it in the IV port, and I thought it was a sedative, and she turned and walked away. Didn't ask, how do you feel? How's that? You okay? Nothing. Left the room. She gave me a paralytic and walked away. I wasn't hooked up to anything. and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. I couldn't call for help. I died on the table.
Oh my right God. There.
And that's how the near-death experience happened. And having been immobilized by these entities my whole life when they would take me, and then having that be how I was dying was
so I was about to say, that's too wild. Holy cow.
What's that my process, husband had Bob? To keep
oxygen beside me for months by the bed because I would just wake up screaming and I couldn't breathe. That's why I did the PTSD therapy. And that's what led to this, you know, being able to share it in book form. So.
Yeah. What's the process there?
I want to ask you, Bob, because Bob, everybody, a lot of our fans know that, you know, the people that listen to the show, Bob's a former nurse.
And, I'll give my best opinion.
Stellar. But, you know, is there, like, before you're hooked up to the machines, I guess is what Karen's saying, is that like.
It's pretty atypical. You'd give somebody a paralytic without having them on a monitor. It'd also be very random to give you a paralytic, walk out of the room, not tell anyone. Like, because you're going to give a paralytic usually to do intubation, put that breathing tube in.
Right. And I usually get intubated because I'm getting back surgery. So
absolutely.
So that's
absolutely
a common thing to do. But, and my doctor told me, he admitted off the record.
Yes, sure.
She gave you a paralytic. Man, they admitted what happened, but I couldn't do anything about it. You can't.
Who do you think you this person was?
You can't go after
was?
A big hospital, trust me.
Who do could you have think been, this could have been was? A could have been never a resident, could have been a, yeah, could have been all, who knows? I mean.
Never saw her again.
That's a wild, wild incident. But yeah, I mean, that would not be how you would go about it.
No. And I had so many surgeries. It was the weirdest thing because it happened so fast.
Yeah.
You know, it was like she knew what she was doing because I've had so many surgeries. When they come in and they give you a sedative, usually it's a pre-op when they're wheeling
right,
you
right,
down
right.
the hallway.
Give you a little Versed. Yeah.
Yeah. They give you a little Versed as you're going down the hallway. You don't even remember getting to the operating room.
Absolutely.
And so this whole thing was so highly unusual that.
Did you ever get to talk to the person? Did you ever?
Never saw her again. Couldn't find her. Couldn't get her name. Couldn't get any
information. Wait, what?
Never saw her again.
Okay. Here's a follow-up question.
She might have been an agent of some kind.
Well, I was.
The people coming in the room to revive me.
Yeah.
The anesthesiologist who intubated me to revive me was not her. It was another. It was a man who I saw again many times. And I kept asking him, who's the woman? He didn't know.
Nobody okay, yeah, that leads to multiple questions of A, did that happen to anybody else in that hospital system?
They're
like, is this no? But I'm just curious. Like, so is that is this lady is she really doing this like serially or
like an angel of death kind of thing? Yeah,
right. Or you know, like a Kevorkian on the slide. Some people do that kind of weird stuff. You know,
angel
of death nurse type stuff. You know, there are people out there that do stuff like that. But whatever.
Yeah.
What or like Mikey's saying, is it? Is she some kind of a like an X-Files agent, like, you know, the Smoking Man Center?
Right.
I mean,
that makes me think of if they've never seen this person again, nobody knows who she is. Is she some kind of like MIB lady that's coming in there and just messing you up and trying to, you know, take you off the board almost like a chess piece.
I'd have to go to therapy too after that. I'm not going to lie.
And I felt bad for her because I was like, gosh, if she knows what she did, she probably feels so bad. And so I really felt bad for her. I prayed for her. You know, I wanted her to be okay because I thought this has got to be as traumatic for her as it was for me.
Sure. Sure.
If she didn't do it.
Or you hope so.
I hope so. Right.
You really hope so.
Well, you know, I'm so naive that initially that's what I thought. And then everyone's like, Karen, this doesn't sound right. You know, this is just too weird.
That's
you know,
extremely, and then after that, my surgeon
had a huge bike accident and almost dies. Someone almost tries to run him off the road while he's riding his bicycle. I mean, crazy stuff. So I just keep prayed up and I keep my eyes open and I'm careful because you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, they don't like when you share this kind of stuff. It's not a positive. So that was my answer to your, have I ever run into the men in black? Well,
maybe
really, I've had a lot of encounters that don't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. But you have the sense or the feeling or awareness that like there's a presence watching sort of almost or even physically seeing them at times. So, I mean, you're aware that they're aware, like it's the whole, I know, you know, that I know that, you know, that I know.
Exactly.
I love it.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't keep it quiet. It's just, you know, I'm not going to be quiet either, because I have an opportunity to help people, and I have an opportunity to stop this from happening to other people. And I've got an opportunity to say it's okay to have these conversations.
Sure.
Because society says if you say you've been abducted by a non-human entity, you're crazy, you're delusional, and that's not the case. There are too many of us this has happened to. I'm a normal person. I got no reason to share this. Right. It doesn't do me any good. The only reason I have to share this is because it is going to help somebody else, because I was helped and I want to share that. Because trust me, this is not like something you do for fanfare and accolades. It's something you do for this, you know.
You're not wrong.
If this happened to me, I would not be talking about it. Yeah, you know, with the platform that we're building here, I would be hard pressed to talk about. And this is kind of what I was going to kind of go down that road. And you've already started us down that road, Karen, is we've just met, you know, we've been kind of emailing and texting back and forth and getting to know you a little bit from, you know, just Justin and some other podcasts that I've seen you on. And to me, and Bub and I have met a lot of kooky people, a lot, you know, we've been to a lot of events and concerts and festivals and have met pretty strange people.
A good variety.
You just never know. It's like, well, you know, that's a really interesting story, but the detail that your stories have is absolutely mind blowing to me. And you don't seem like a crazy person. You seem very well balanced.
Yeah.
And it's, I feel also like a crazy
person sometimes for doing this.
Sure.
Honestly, understandable. You know, thank you. I appreciate that.
But
I think that's why I'm doing it too, because most of us who've been through this, we're just normal people.
Yeah.
We're your neighbor, we're your doctor, your nurse, your neighbor, your friend, your whoever, you know.
Right.
There are a lot of people who go through this and they do just mentally break and they don't ever find their way back. And I understand that.
Sure.
I really do. There are some people who will never be able to hold down a job, who live on the streets. I know of these people through other people and of outreach services and people trying to help them. And it breaks my heart, because this is a lot. This is a lot for anyone to take.
And
you know, and that's why I think it's important to say, it's okay to talk about this. People aren't crazy. Yeah. This is happening. Sure. And now our government's admitting that it's happening. So
bingo.
I started this before all of that started coming out. And, but I'm grateful that some of it is. I always think I think Bubby and I were talking about this a little bit, when they start saying the truth and they start sharing these things, I always think, what's their angle? Because they're not doing it for my good.
Right.
So there's an angle behind it. But I'm grateful that some of it's coming out, because at least it's allowing some people to find help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the unfortunate situation of where we're at is, if you get to where we are of asking questions, you start to find out, okay, well, maybe that doesn't line up, this doesn't line up. And that's why, even when they start to kind of co-align with what we're thinking is happening, that's when you start to go, again, like I said earlier, when you are the counterculture and you start to become the culture, you're like, well, wait a minute. I wasn't in this big group. I was in this small group, and now it's it starts to make you not trust it as much. But again, is that because, oh my God, it's actually happening?
Yeah.
And I never thought it would ever happen. That's a whole nother thread of it, where it's like things you never thought would happen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of them getting real, real, real close that 10, 20 years ago, you can't have this conversation. Not in earnest fashion, because there's no real, there's no tic-tac UFO. There's no government, you know, kind of culping to this. There's no multiple objects shot down over the last year over, you know, U.S. airspace that they still haven't really divulged on. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot there that we can talk about now that, again, 10, 15 years ago, people would have said, okay, you're nutty as all get out. Well, right. But I'm...
Fair I know enough, what you mean. Fair enough. I know
but
what you mean. But
back in the day, it was like, you might as well just got the scarlet letter out yourself or carved it on your chest, like, you know, ufologist, and people could be like, okay, well, let's hear what crazy things you have to say. And that's just how it felt all the time. And now people are like, hey,
just get your tinfoil hat on and
it's one of those things of when everyone else that, again, usually looks at you with a skewed eyebrow, when now they're coming up to you and going, hey, did you hear about such and such? And you're like, wait, what? Why are you coming to me
about this that we've been on to for 20 years and this, now you have people that either called us crazy back in the day or conspiracy. Oh, you tinfoil hat wearing weirdos. Or
this is like the Seinfeld episode where the girl tries to tell George it's not him, it's her. And he's like, no, you're not giving me the it's not you, it's me routine. He's like, I invented that routine.
That's my routine.
We know the routine.
You know what this makes me, it kind of aligns with, you know, I want to say people like Kathy O'Brien. So the people that come out and talk about MK Ultra and being, you know, these kind of programs that they've been in since they were kids. And and you have a lot of people that have come out and written books about their experiences under mind control.
Written off for years.
And then you have Tom O'Neill's 20-year deep dive into the Manson family and the CIA and Jolly West and the CIA. And that, oh my gosh, it turns out that the CIA was giving people like Charles Manson and Ted Kaczynski and all these groups and people LSD. And so for years, these people have been ridiculed. Big experiment. But now, you know, when someone like Kathy O'Brien, 20, 25 years later, there's so much validity now to Kathy O'Brien's story. When I first heard about it.
Yeah, she's a brave woman.
In 2001, and she has a new documentary that our friend Adrian helped produce and direct that has recently come out.
And, really? I've got to see that because I followed her. I'll look that up.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's out. I'm almost certain it's out. But it's a pretty comprehensive, you know, where they deep dug into, you know, the Freedom of Information Act documents, document dumps of these programs existing on the books. Now, some of them are heavily redacted, but there's a lot of overlay with abduction stories and people going through MK Ultra and these kind of things where, you know, like I said, 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it sounds kooky, but now all of these things, the Grush hearings, the things that we're talking about in a public sphere are giving stories like yours a real base for, you know, to not seem as far out as what maybe once it was.
And that's what, and that's what's hard is that you go through a lifetime going, look, I saw humans working with these things, you know, and I know that they were told not to speak because they utilized me as part of the, this is what's going to happen to your wives, your daughters, your family members, your friends, if you say something. And I get how they do it. You know, when you're working a job and, hey, you get this top secret clearance here, sign this NDA. We're going to put you on this super cool program. And then before you know it, you're involved in something you can't get out of.
Right.
And
what a terrible thing.
That's what happened to these people that were working there. There was no way for them to get out. And, you know, I'm not going to do anything to jeopardize my children, my family, my loved ones.
Sure. Sure. They pin you.
And then they used us, the abductees, to show them what would happen. You know, you don't want this to happen to your family members. It was horrifying and heart-wrenching. But, you know, so I get why we'll never get full disclosure. Because that would mean the government agencies, the powers that be, whoever was involved,
culpability.
Would have to, they'd have to say what they did and why, and that won't happen. That won't happen.
Well, that's why I hope that there's actually, it's not, I hope it's not up to us. I hope it's up to, if there is a more advanced entity or this or that or whatever, that there's this kind of like silent countdown of like, hey, either you guys do it or we will. Like there's going to be this like dead man's, you know, switch that goes off for the non-human intelligences and what have you, where they go, hey, you get like another 5 years. And if you don't do it, we're going to do it.
Well, for me, I know the end of the story because I believe in the Christian Bible. So for me, I feel like I have the end of the story.
Gotcha.
And it will happen
for sure
in that way, if you follow that story. And I believe that. So personally, you know, that is going to happen. You know, they don't win in the end. You know, the bad guys don't win.
I like to think that.
So, and that's my faith, and you know, and I'm grateful for that because it keeps me going.
Right on.
You know, and sometimes, you know, that's the most important thing. It is the most important thing in my life. But, this stuff can be deep and scary and hard to deal with. And as more and more people have cell phones and videos and pictures on those phones, and they have the ability to instantly share things across multiple platforms. And then you add in the deep fakes with AI and everything else. you know, it's anybody's game now. Anything can happen. Anything can get released, and we wouldn't know if it was real or not.
I know.
It makes me just feel like we never know what's
Miami
real.
Mall.
Yeah. But even historically speaking, the books, you know, all the stories, all the history, say you go to the Smithsonian, whatever you want to talk about.
Let's
do. What is real? Like, really?
Yeah. And that's why people fall back on faith. That's why people go back to it. Because it's the only real thing we have. Because I look at when they were taking me, when I was little, they were doing things that today are like wearing 3D goggles. Because we call them screen memories. And the closest thing I can depict it to is what it's like to put on a set of 3D goggles and you're just in it.
Yeah.
You know, but back then no one would understand what I was talking about. Mm. Rooms that were just screens, you know.
No.
Or not remembering something, but having been fully present. I don't know if you've ever heard what happens to some people when they take Ambien.
God, yeah. Are you kidding me? I used to work night shift as a nurse.
Yeah.
It happened to me once. I got up, I drove to a convenience store, got a Diet Coke, a pack of Reese's Pieces, came back, I used my debit card. I said hello to the local sheriff.
And no memory of it.
And it was probably, I had the receipt. It was like 3:14 in the morning. No memory.
Oh, sure.
I was sitting by my bed and I'm like, but to me, and I'll never try it again, you know, my doctor had given it to me. I wasn't, something weird like that. But to me, it's like, it was terrible because it's like, this is the kind of BS that's been happening to me my whole life. And it's
I don't need this in a pill form.
Right. And I'm like, is this where that technology comes from?
Right. Interesting. That's interesting because that used to be, if we had patients who were in the hospital, again, you're in a hospital, you can't sleep. So people would always, hey, I need something for sleep. And then you call the resident on call and they go, give them 5 milligrams of Ambien or whatever the dose was. And it's like, oh, sweet Jesus. Because after enough times of doing it, you learned it was like roulette. You could give it to somebody and they might sleep all night. You could give it to another patient and they might wander the halls. They might rip out every IV they have. It was just like, it was the strangest medication to administer to a patient. I've never had it.
We're set where you go through this and you're wide awake, but you have no memory of it. It's the same darn thing that So when people say, well, how can that all happen and you don't have all your memories? Because I remember a lot of it because I didn't react the same way to some people.
You can.
What they did to us. So,
right.
Yeah. You know.
Well, I'd have patients tell me their whole life story on Versed, and I'm like, they wouldn't remember 3 seconds later. They're like, I slept the whole procedure. I'm like, no, we talked football the whole time. the whole time. You never once stopped talking. But to them, to the person, he was like, I slept. And his wife looked at me and I was like, no, we talked the whole time. He never once stopped talking. It was hilarious.
Crazy, right?
That and when you go through trauma, you compartmentalize your memories.
Oh, and you shut it down.
Yes.
And so I did that at about 6 years old. I shut down at 6 years old. They found me rocking back and forth in the corner of a bathroom stall, just holding my knees. And that's when I realized there was no one who was going to help me. There was nothing I could do about it. And from that point on, my life, I just compartmentalized the regular part of my life and that part of my life. And never let the two interfere, although emotionally it always affected me.
Right.
And it affected every part of my life.
Right.
But I was able to separate the two for the most part. Nighttime is the hardest time, and it still is for me, except I know I'm safe now, but
you
know, but that's, I can never look out a window at night. So. Yeah. I'm still on high alert, you know, at night, but
it buries it all. So you can try to live your subconscious mind. It's all still there. It's just buried so deep that it's splitting the two. That way you can try to live a normal life, but really all that pain, all of those experiences are just buried so deep. So when you get older, a lot of times people have, you know, a lot of mental afflictions. They have, you know, multiple personality disorder, or whether it's anxiety or depression, and they start going through therapy, and then all of this stuff bubbles up, these memories bubble up, and it just starts coming out a lot of times when people are older.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So I know we've kind of gone down a strange road here.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. No, it's great.
This is,
but I think it's appropriate. So yeah, it worked. So
this has been amazing, Karen. I thank you so much for sharing all these personal, and I know scary at times, these stories, you know, for you to have gone through this. And I just find it fascinating how put together you are, and after going through all of this, and how we're able to sit here and have this type of conversation, because I don't know that a lot of people would have come out on the other end as well. I know you probably had a lifetime of work to be able to get to this point.
I did. And honestly, there are times I almost didn't come out on the other end.
Yeah.
And I give all glory to God, because I wouldn't have been able to do this, be doing this now. And I wouldn't have come out the other end if it wasn't for him, because there were times when I just was done more than I can count.
Yeah.
But
hit your limit.
But he's lifted that from me. And that's amazing, because it's not something I thought would ever be lifted, and given me something good to do with it, which is awesome. Amazing. Good. You know, more than I could have hoped for is just being able to help other people through it, just to be there, to talk, to make it okay to have these conversations.
Right.
Like, you're not crazy. These things do happen, and it's okay. And you can get through it too, and you can stop it. And that's the most important thing. But thank you for your kind words. That means a lot. Thank you.
Karen, this has been amazing. Thank you.
It's been a really fun episode.
Thank you so, informative. So much.
I could keep going talking to you guys for another 2 hours. Let's do it again.
Same with us.
I'm as like, always.
I'm we'll in. I'm. You got me in. Like, this is one of the most fascinating conversations I think we've ever had on The Strange Road.
It's been really good.
And, you know, big shout out to Justin from Prometheus Lens podcast. He is the man. Yeah.
Very much
brother,
so.
Brother, thank you so much for hooking us. Connecting us with Karen, and let's talk about, let's put the book up there one more time, and we will grab this guy right here. And yes. Karen's book is Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest. Karen, tell us where we can get the book, and let us know where we can find you, or if people want to connect with you and share their story, if maybe this is happening to them and they don't know where to turn.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. The book is Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest, available exclusively at lamarzulli.net. You won't find it anywhere else unless I'm somewhere in person. So lamarzulli.net, and go to his store tab and you'll find it there. There are links to that on my social media and on my website. My website is my name, Karen Wilkinson, author, and I'll give you all this for the show notes. And then there, you can either link to L.A. Marzulli's website to purchase the book, or you can leave me a message if you want to reach out to me. I get a lot of social media messages, and I do wade through those, but those are hard to wade through because there's so much junk in there too. So just reach out to me through my website. It goes straight to my inbox.
Cool.
I will get back to you. It might take me a while because I get a lot of messages, and I do want to take the time to get back with each person. And I'm working on making this an easier process, maybe putting together a group of us that we can work together, to just be there for each other. So please feel free to reach out to me. If you just want to share a story, you want to share what's happened to you. I'm here to listen. I believe you. I know how hard this is. So, that's what that page is there for. Or for any reason you want to contact me. You can find me on social media. My Facebook is just my name, Karen Wilkinson, and my Instagram is Karen Wilkinson Author. And those all have links to each other, so you can go back and forth. I really hope I'll hear from people. The next place that I will be is the Prophecy Watchers Conference in Orlando, Florida. That is February 28th through March 2nd, I believe. And I'll be there talking to people, meeting people, signing books with L.A. Marzulli. And then after that, I don't have my schedule firmed up yet, but I will have that schedule page up on my website again soon. It is not up there right now. So if you go looking for it, you won't find it. But if you can go to L.A. Marzulli's website and look at his schedule, I'm often at the same events that he is. So that's
cool. Easy to find me.
So,
beautiful. Excellent.
Amazing, Karen. Amazing. Well, I'll tell you what, we want to come back and give you a proper goodbye. Bub and I are going to outro the show. Is there any last words for our audience that you would like to leave us with? The floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just want to say thank you to those of you who've hung on and listened here to the end. And if you know someone who's gone through something like this, you don't have to believe. You don't have to do anything. You just have to listen. And if you've gone through this, just know that there's people out there who will believe you, who will listen to you, and there's a way to stop it if it's still going on. So just don't give up. You're not alone. This is something that happens to far too many people for us to ignore. And please just reach out to me on my website. If nothing else, I'll get back to you. I will. And I just pray that this has helped someone in some way. And thank you guys so much for your platform and for your amazing show. This has just been such a pleasant time for me. I have really enjoyed being with you guys today. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Oh, thank you,
Karen. We appreciate it.
We appreciate the heck out of you too. Everybody, Karen Wilkinson.
What a show, man. Thank you.
Wait, amazing. Till that comes. Wow. Took me off guard. I'll tell you what, that was incredible.
There's a lot there. There's a lot there.
I didn't want to dive too deep into Karen's story because, again, I think just you and I kind of, I really like to be a little bit in the dark. But now that I know what this is all about, I'm definitely going to go get Karen's book, read into all of these other accounts and what she's documented. Fantastic episode. You know, I'm a little shocked. I'm not even sure what to say or think. So.
It's a lot.
Been wild, man. It's a lot.
That's a good one, though. I like when we get done with those episodes and we're like, holy cow. Like,
just so cool.
Totally blew my mind the entire time. I'm down with that.
And you guys out there, find us on all the social media platforms at The Strange Road. Go check out that Discord server link in the description. We're going to be all over the place this spring and summer. Please reach out to us. You know, we have our Strange Happenings bi-weekly live stream and, you know, pop some links in the Facebook group and the Discord. If there's anybody that wants us to cover anything in those Strange Happenings, drop us those links. We appreciate all of you out there, all of you always in the chat, all of you listening in Spotify, Apple, everywhere else, and YouTube. Make sure you hit that like button. Got to hit that notification bell and share to all your friends. Get the word out about The Strange Road and Karen and everything she's doing. Check out all of Karen's links in the description. And hey, it's Rolo. What's up, buddy?
He couldn't help himself. I know. You know,
Mikey and Bub signing out. Love, peace, and chicken grease.
See everybody.
Bye-bye.